Hey, welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano in for Rachel Nichols here in Las Vegas. And back in LA, we've got our friends here, ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps and the undefeated Clinton Yates. So look, fellas, we got a jam-packed show. So let's start right there in Los Angeles where you are, where our producer Demetrius, a real-life Clippers fan, is celebrating because Kawhi Leonard has signed a four-year max deal of $176.3 million to stay with the Clippers. Kawhi turned down his $36 million player option to become a free agent, but it was expected that he would stay in L.A., of course, so Leonard is still recovering from a torn ACL that kept him out of the final eight games of the playoffs, and he could miss some significant time in this upcoming season. So, Tim, I'll start with you. Are you surprised Kawhi signed this four-year deal with the Clippers?
I am surprised, George, because around the league, you know, even in Vegas this past few days at Summer League, where I was until you traded off of me today, the expectation was Kawhi Leonard was going to sign a 1+1 and stay with the Clippers for this season at least and go back into free agency next year when he could sign a five-year supermax deal and make a lot more money. And even if he was just trying to maximize his revenue this summer, he could have opted in and signed an extension off of that, as our cap expert Bobby Marks laid out yesterday, and made a bunch more money doing it that way. So it is interesting he chose to pick this direction, but now he lines up with the same contract as Paul George. They both have player options in 3 years, and it gives the Clippers a lot more flexibility than I think anybody in the league really was expecting them to have coming out of this summer.
I think for me it also means that there's some level of stability as well as flexibility, because it's not like, oh, there's an injury. Oh, what's going on with his uncle? Oh, is he going to play? Oh, is he sitting in the crowd or is he sitting on the set? Like, it finally means Kawhi is with the Clippers as well as PG, and we can get on with that particular portion of all of the variables, which is a good thing. I was getting, frankly, a little tired of hearing about Kawhi's every move every 2 seconds. You know, I'd like to think that he wanted to be with this team to some degree for a decent amount of time, and this shows that even if he opts out at the end, he's committed to the next couple years because he knows that he's got a rehab and he's got some guys there that are counting on him.
Yeah, certainly that is great news for the Clippers organization. I don't think there's any question. By the way, an organization that hasn't had a ton of stability, more so recently, obviously, under Steve Ballmer, but historically, we all know that that's the case. But it is interesting, you know, Tim, because you did mention the 1+1, and you know, Bobby Marks, as you pointed out, mentioned that. Do we have the tweet or do we have a graphic of what Kawhi's financial situation could have looked like? Because, again, here's what his extension is. You see the numbers there, 39, 42, 45, and 48 approximately, almost 49 in the last year of the deal. He could have signed a four-year deal, $187 million extension, if he had opted in to the $36 million player option for this upcoming season. And then the total would have been $223 million. So, Clinton, I'll go back to you real quick on Kawhi. Do you think that just the injury played a factor in this?
I do, and I think that that probably plays a factor in psychologically, again, your rehab game. If you're thinking about contracts while you're trying to get your body together, I'm not a doctor, nor am I a capologist, as Bobby Marks, but I can tell you when your mind's on your money, your mind is not necessarily on your body in the same way. And listen, I realize we're arguing about tens of million dollars after the 150-plus mark. I understand that this is not necessarily, you know, somebody who's picking for pennies here, but I do think it matters, and that's where the stability factor comes in. At some point, after guys like us are talking about him every single day, it's like, you know what, can we just do this so that I can get this done, and also so that my team understands what my commitment is. I think that's a big part of it for sure.
Yeah, and certainly if you look around the NBA, the way this played out, the fact that everybody went on with their business and got their stuff done, it wasn't like teams were waiting like a couple years ago to see where Kawhi Leonard was going to go. So the expectation was one way or the other, as Clinton said, he was going to be in L.A. It's really just a matter of how he was going to decide to commit to his time. And this is a big thing for the Clippers to get 3 years, as Clinton said, with stability there. It's a really big deal for them.
Yeah, and of course, producer Demetrius gets to just have a sigh of relief here now after the Clippers
Clipper
get their guys signed, sealed, and delivered. Yeah, him and Clipper Darryl basically get to have a cocktail together, perhaps, to celebrate. All right, let's move on. Major League Baseball hit a home run last night. The Field of Dreams game was awesome, and it had a perfect Hollywood ending with Tim Anderson of the White Sox smashing a walk-off home run over the New York Yankees. Clinton, you were at the game last night, traveled all the way to L.A. to help us out here. How cool was the experience? experience. And what do you think the NBA could do to do a version of Field of Dreams?
That was pretty cool. They did a lot, if you know what I'm saying. It was quite the production, if you get my meaning. There was a whole lot going on, but a lot of people liked it, and it looked great on TV. But let me tell you, the NBA version. I live in Venice Beach for one reason and one reason only, because I walked into a movie theater after I saw a different movie, and I wasn't allowed to go into a rated R movie, but I saw White Man Can't Jump anyway, and guess what? 30 years later, I live there because it's that dope. Look, Muscle Beach, check it out. We got the handball courts. We got the lovely beaches. There's a skate park there as well. Tremendous graffiti walls as well. Just beautiful locale, all right? There's a reason why your boy's there almost every day, all right? That's where I would play basketball. Check them out, hooping. Great place to sit, too. It's fantastic.
Hey, look, for me, I'm a New York guy, so to me, it's either two places. You know, the Knicks have not been the team that everybody would like them to be in New York for the past couple decades. If they ever get back to the NBA Finals in June, that would be a pretty great thing for the league and for everybody in New York. But for, as a New York guy, Rucker Park is the place. I mean, you go back through the history of the sport. You know, we're showing Kevin Durant here back in 2011 playing there. I mean, there's just been, you know, go back to Julius Erving in the 70s. This is the birthplace of basketball for many people in New York, going back to the summer, playing in the street ball circuit around the city, which is, you know, you see guys from around the league stop back there and play all the time. So for me, you know, to have some kind of NBA experience at Rucker Park, be a pretty incredible thing down the road. So we'll see what happens.
Obi showed up there one time. It was amazing.
I mean, it's, yeah, right. Whenever you were in the city, you heard about guys going to New York and playing, it would become an event. You'd have people rushing down there to see it. I mean, it was just, it's the coolest place. It's just this little place in the middle of Upper Manhattan and, you know, in the middle of Harlem. It's really a pretty awesome place if you ever get a chance to go check it out.
Well, how about this? I think, how about we do both, right? You can do Rucker Park at a time maybe late in the season when the weather may be a little cooperative, right? Yeah, and then you could do something in Venice in the winter. How about perhaps even a game at the Hall of Fame site, right? Like, I think that there are a couple of different places you could potentially do that. How are you feeling about potentially a Hall of Fame scenario there, Clinton Yates?
Don't love that, but I got to give some shouts to Berry Farms in D.C.
I was going
to
say, where's my D.C.?
It's right here, Tim. Relax.
I was waiting for it.
I got my slots. But yes, Berry Farms is the other place I would suggest. Personally, I don't need the Hall of Fame. That's for you, Timmy.
I was going to say, Clinton was a complete sellout for a second. If he wasn't going to bring up D.C. at all, like, oh, man, I'm Venice Beach guy through and through. I was like, come on, where's D.C.? Where's the love?
I just live there.
I know. Clinton, look, all of a sudden, you see, you get a little sunshine for a year or two, and you just forget about where you came from.
I jumped on a plane first thing this morning to come back to this with friends like these. Yeah. No, Berry Farms is great. But Venice is, it's just iconic. There's a movie. Go watch it. It's fantastic. Yeah, better than Field of Dreams.
It's hard to argue.
See, this is the difference between me and you guys is, you know, you guys merely adopted the sunshine and palm trees. I was born in it, basically. So okay, there's that. All right, let's move on to some WNBA history from last night. Breonna Stewart balled out as the Seattle Storm beat the Connecticut Sun in the WNBA's inaugural Commissioner's Cup. It was the first midseason championship in the league's 25-year history, and it was a big payday for the Storm. The win clinched a $30,000 bonus for each member of the Storm and an extra $5,000 for Breonna Stewart. The Sun received $10,000 each. So, Tim, do you think the WNBA's Commissioner's Cup could work in the NBA?
Absolutely, George. And this is something that is being built up to be in the NBA down the road. You know, it's not a coincidence that Adam Silver, after talking about this for years, having a midseason tournament, something modeled off of the FA Cup in England or the other midseason soccer tournaments in Europe, has now introduced it in the WNBA as sort of a test run to see how it'll go. And it seems like this has been a really big success. Talking to people in Las Vegas about it with the league, they seem very happy with how it went. And it would certainly not surprise me at all if a couple of years down the road, this is something that comes into the NBA calendar. And part of the reason I think that's going to happen is because of the success that we saw the play-in tournament have this year. You know, that's another thing that Adam Silver spent years pushing for. We saw that really generate a ton of interest down the stretch of the season. Teams like Boston and the Lakers and the Wizards all fighting to get in the playoffs. You had that incredible Warriors-Lakers game for the 7 seed. So you put all that together with the momentum that generated and combine it with the success of this WNBA tournament, and I definitely think this is something we're going to see in the NBA in the years to come.
I just don't see it that way in terms of its ability to be effective in the NBA. And also, the reason why this works for me personally with the WNBA is that the ladies get more money. We talk about the pay disparity all the time. So anything that contributes to them being able to make more cash to be the best players on earth, I'm with. I don't think that motivation is the same in the NBA. I don't think that you can get guys to get up for the same reasons. Now, people might like it. It might work on just sort of a rivalry level, but it just doesn't strike me as something that guys are going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm about to bang on you on that commissioner's cup. It just doesn't feel the same way to me. But people who like women's basketball, specifically the WNBA, it's more competition, more eyeballs, more money. That's always a good thing.
And then Clinton brings up a great point. When you talk to people in the NBA, the biggest pushback they have on the midseason tournament is, what are we playing for, right? And in the NBA, for all of its existence, it's been, we're trying to win a championship. Now you're going to introduce this other thing, and we're going to try to play for that. I think that is the biggest hurdle the league would have to get over to show teams, hey, this is why this is something you should want to play for. That's the question that I think, to his point, I would like to see, you know, a lot of teams would like to see what the actual answer to that would be.
All right, so I don't know if you guys are wrestling fans, but to quote the great poet laureate Ted DiBiase, everybody's got a price, okay? So if you put enough money up for the winners, yeah, I think that guys will be motivated for that. But look, it's going to take a lot of money when you're talking about max players making over $40 million for one specific event. Now, we do know that Adam Silver, and Tim, you kind of mentioned it briefly there, certainly wants this to become a thing. It's what I like to call the soccerization, yeah, of basketball, yeah, in a lot of ways. And I do think that basketball and soccer, particularly because of its global reach, or their global reach, I do think that there are some similarities there. I think that you can make this potentially even a world event. Maybe that is something that you end up doing, right?
I like that idea, George. That's actually a really good idea. That makes more sense to me. I'd rather watch that, quite frankly, than the Olympics on some level. If we're talking about the competition that's going to come together, is that you got real teams that play together that would be competing against each other for something a little bit more than just money and some level of bragging rights across the globe. That's actually a fantastic idea, Sedano.
Real Madrid versus the Lakers, you know, CSKA Moscow versus the Knicks, be pretty cool. We got to see something like that.
Look at that.
If Commissioner Silver's here today in Vegas, I'll make sure to just give him my thoughts.
Yeah,
on
there you
it,
go. Right? That's the way there you go.
But look, they've already tested this to some level beyond just the WNBA. The G League does the G League Showcase pre-pandemic, every December here in Las Vegas at the Mandalay Bay. I've called the games there in the championship games with PJ Carlissimo. So that's something that was introduced there. And we all know, whether it's the G League or the WNBA, once they introduce something into those leagues, we're probably closer and closer to getting it with the NBA. So we'll see how that works out.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or miss league.
Make. Miss.
It's a make or miss league.
Make. Finesse. Down by one. Trey Jones, check this out, finishes a tough layup to beat the Hornets. So, Clinton, how do you like Trey Jones' hang time on this?
The hang and the hit, as we like to say in the broadcast community. I love that. That was a good play. I mean, he keeps it down there, and to go off window here, very resourceful shot.
Oh, and Kai Jones, a big, long, athletic guy, drafted 19th overall by the Hornets. I mean, that's an impressive finish by Trey Jones over him to get that win for the Spurs.
Yeah, the hoop and the harm, as they like to say as well, Clinton. All right, next, miss buzzers. With 0.6 seconds left, LiAngelo Ball hoisted this shot to beat the buzzer before the half. Tim, has LiAngelo done enough to secure a spot on an NBA roster?
I mean, secure a spot on an NBA roster, no. I'd be pretty surprised if he's not in training camp with the Hornets after the way things have gone in Charlotte with Summer League. I mean, obviously his brother is there too, but, you know, we'll see if he gets into the G League. But given where LiAngelo Ball was coming into Summer League, the fact he's played like this, he was working out with the Hornets beforehand, got himself on the roster, did some stuff. Pretty impressive setup for him.
Forget about all this real analysis. Get this guy in the league so we can have all three Ball brothers playing. What are we talking about here? This would be the best marketing thing the NBA has seen in a long time. The family business coming from nothing to something. I would love this. I don't care what team he plays for. Ted Leonsis, sign him up.
I will say this. He's hit a lot of threes here at Summer League, and LeVar's been out here as well. So, all right, next. Make sudden death. In sudden death, Cam Thomas loses the ball but beats the shot clock buzzer with this one-legged three-pointer to win it for Brooklyn. Clinton, how ridiculous was that shot?
Extremely, but what was more ridiculous was the move he was trying to put on him beforehand. This is like the epitome of a summer league play. Cross up, near turnover, heave. Oh, yeah, buddy, I got you. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I was at this game for this play, and I was dying at his reaction afterward because he almost turns the ball over three times. He flings the ball up at the shot clock, and then he acts like he knew what he was doing the whole time. It's like, Cam Thomas, you flung this ball up in the air, it fell in, it was a total accident. Like, you know, I mean, come on, look at the celebration. It's like, oh yeah, I got it. Like, I was dying watching that from the stands. That was amazing.
All right, sticking to Summer League and this theme, it's time to run it back. The best dunks of Summer League so far. At number three, we got Jericho Sims here with this alley-oop. Hello.
A little smooth jazz, by the way, on the background. You got to make a business decision there. He almost broke his hand on top of getting completely banged on and getting kicked to the ground. That's tough.
All right, let's go to number two here. Jalen Suggs with the monster putback.
I would love
Tim,
to see
you think?
A return of the putback dunk. Sorry.
I'd love the putback dunk. And this, I was there for this one, too. That was a monster one. That was another one. Everybody went, whoa. I mean, Jalen Suggs had a monster week. You know, that was a heck of a dunk for him.
And number one, Kai Jones with the poster there.
Well, this is one of those, have we figured out a word for those kinds of dunks yet? Where you sort of don't really get rim, but the ball goes in at an extension point that is.
Probably should call it the Blake Griffin. But, yeah. You know, look, Kai Jones and LaMelo Ball in Charlotte is going to be unbelievable. This kid is a track star. He jumps out of the gym, running up and down the court with LaMelo Ball throwing him 50-foot alley-oops. Like, that was the perfect place for him to land. I am so excited to see him on the court with the Hornets running up and down. That's going to be really, really fun to see.
I love the Hornets.
Yeah,
league pass
for sure. Yeah, they are absolutely a league pass gem. There's no doubt about that. Hey, we got a special treat for you here. Make sure you check out what we've got coming up here in this particular segment with our friend Mark Spears. He's got an episode of the Undefeated's Hoop Stories here, and this one is a crazy one about James Harden. Let's take a listen.
So we're in the bar, and some guy keeps bugging James to the point where the bodyguard has to step in. You know, I think a lot of times people probably scoff at the notion that athletes have bodyguards. Wonder how guys so big, so strong, would need somebody to protect them. And I think you got to realize that bodyguards have to be the bad guy. They got to tell people no and keep people away and keep the wrong people away. Remember in James Harden's first season with the Houston Rockets, and one of their assistant coaches, a friend of mine by the name of J.B. Bickerstaff, he's like, yo, let's go get a drink after the game and catch up. I was like, cool. I pick him up from the hotel. We go to this like little lounge in San Francisco. And to our surprise, James Harden is there with his bodyguard. And his bodyguard, though, wasn't what you expect. He had like this 5'7 white dude. And I was like, man, he must have a big gun or something because this guy doesn't look intimidating in the least. So we're in the bar and some guy keeps bugging James to the point where the bodyguard has to step in. And this guy is a lot bigger than the bodyguard. So they have words, and the words get louder. And then all of a sudden, there's pushing. It gets physical. So James Harden's bodyguard is on the ground all of a sudden, fighting this man, and the other guy is beating up James Harden's bodyguard. Meanwhile, James Harden is just watching, like, he didn't get involved or nothing. He's just watching. And to our surprise, this mystery man was beating up James Harden's bodyguard. So all of a sudden, the club guys come in, club security, and these are really, really big dudes. They come in and grab both of them, and they're about to knock them out and throw them out of the club. And then finally, we're like, yo, 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 that guy's with the Rockets. That guy's with the Rockets. So like, all right, they threw the other guy out. And the disappointment in James' eyes, man. Just the disappointment that this guy was his bodyguard and he just got his butt kicked in front of everybody. And you know, the next season, James Harden had this really big, different bodyguard.
All right, we'll see what the Lakers are all about. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, alongside ESPN NBA writer Tim Bontemps, the Undefeated's Clint Yates, and the world-famous NBA reporter Nick Friedell now joins us. All right, you guys ready? Because it's time for another round of everyone's favorite game, Something, Nothing, or Everything. All right, first thing up here, let's start with the Lakers. LeBron James and the Lakers made a flurry of offseason moves, including trading for Russell Westbrook, bringing in Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, Malik Monk, Kent Bazemore, Wayne Ellington, Kendrick Nunn, among others. So, Nick, let's start with you. Lakers offseason moves are something, nothing, or everything.
This is a big something, George, because they've recreated essentially the 2012 All-Star team in 2021. I don't know what the hell is going to happen a few years down the line, but this is the team that is built to win this season. I don't know if they have enough to finish out in 82 games, but it is sure as hell going to be fun to watch, and the characters in play make this a day-to-day real-life sports drama.
I mean, there's no question that that's true. I mean, the Lakers are going to be the most fascinating team in the league this year. But if you're talking about, is this going to change the Lakers' title chances? I think it's nothing. Because you look at this team, and I don't think they're better than last year's team. You know, last year's team had Anthony Davis and LeBron James and a team that had one of the best defenses in the NBA. And they had a real identity. What is the identity of this Lakers team? They have to figure out how Russell Westbrook and LeBron James are going to play together. I don't think that fit's going to be great. They brought in all these minimum players, some of them decent signings, you know, getting guys like Wayne Ellington, Trevor Ariza, you know, Melo can come in and score for them off the bench. Kendrick Nunn was a nice mid-level signing. But it's hard to look at this Laker team and see, here's a coherent vision of how they're going to play. And I just think the fit with LeBron and Russ is going to be tough. I don't think the defense is going to be good enough. I just don't think this has raised their championship level the way that a lot of people do.
This is certainly something for me. I don't know that it raises their championship level, but the reason why a lot of people think they got bounced last year is because they got hurt late. And I actually do think Westbrook and LeBron fit together because it takes a little bit of the load off of both of them in terms of how they can coexist. I like the fact that even though they're old, they're all sort of aligned in mission. Melo's coming in there trying to figure something out in terms of what he can do late in his career. And I think that if Russell Westbrook is going to cut that usage rate for anybody on earth, it's going to be LeBron James and AD. And I like the Dwight Howard re-addition as well. Third stint in L.A. It's like Tim Bontemps getting back here finally after like 2 years.
Hey, listen, we said 2 years ago when Russell Westbrook went to the Rockets, he was going to change playing with his childhood buddy James Harden. We said when Russell Westbrook went to the Wizards, he was going to change with Bradley Beal because he wanted to be there. Russell Westbrook is Allen Iverson. He is going to do what he's going to do. You know, he had the commercial, right? Now I do what I want. Russell Westbrook has always done what he wanted. That's the way he's always been. I do not see that changing with LeBron James. I think he's going to always do the same things he's always done, and I just don't think the fit is very good. And again, even bigger than that, the Lakers have been built on defense. This team, as constructed, I do not see them being able to guard the way they have the past couple of years. That's been the backbone of what's made them one of the best teams in the league.
Well, look, I look at it this way. Let's just start from an offensive perspective, and I think that you guys kind of alluded to this a little bit. Last year, if I recall the numbers correctly, and Jackie and Ramona and I talked about this yesterday, when LeBron's on the floor, they were the second-best offense in the league, okay? When he was off the floor for one reason or another, whether it was injury or just rest, they were the 28th best offense in the league. I do think that you could start, if you're Frank Vogel, staggering some of those minutes a little bit, making sure Russ is on the floor when LeBron's not on the floor. I know those are limited minutes, but that's a good place to start. They also have David Fizdale on this coaching staff, who coached LeBron in Miami, who also played with a player similarly to Russell Westbrook in Dwayne Wade. And I'm not comparing the two. Dwayne Wade is a surefire Hall of Famer. I think Russ is on that trajectory as well. They're a little different even stylistically, but neither was a floor spacer. And Dwayne adapted his game at a much younger age than Russell Westbrook is right now to be able to play around LeBron, became one of the best cutters in the league, and certainly that fit became a lot better after their first season together. Now, they don't have a lot of time, as Nick alluded to. I don't think this is a team that's going to be together forever. But I do think that if there's any time, Tim, that Russ is going to adapt, it's going to be with LeBron James. And if you tell me that LeBron James is going to be healthy this year, I kind of trust him to figure something like this out.
I mean, look, again, I'll say it again. Russell Westbrook has not done this in the past. And people, if this is the same year, third year in a row, we've had the same refrain. I'll believe it when I see it, you know.
Okay. We'll have to see it. We'll see how it unfolds. Let's go on to the next one here. Off to the Great Northwest, where Dame Lillard was shutting down a Lakers fan. Speaking of the Lakers, yesterday Dame responded to a Twitter user who tweeted, "How much y'all want to bet that before the NBA season starts, the Lakers will still get Damian Lillard?" Dame tweeted back, "Bet a million." Clinton, Dame clapping back at a fan on Twitter. Something, nothing, or everything.
Not unlike Gary Payton II's dunk in Summer League. This is everything, okay? Your boy is here for the clapbacks, all right? All y'all know that if you come incorrect on the bird, I just might bang you out. No, I'm kidding. But I like this because it shows fan engagement, and he has a history of this. One time he was wearing a shirt, and some guy tried to get on him, and he told him it was a Lamborghini carpet, okay? Look at that, okay? That's A-plus level. novel Twitter game right there. This is everything to me. I love this. I mean, look,
Dame's incredible on Twitter. This is everything for me because the Lakers just traded everything they had to get Russell Westbrook. What are they trading for Damian Lillard? LeBron James? Anthony Davis? Like, sure, they could trade one of them to the Blazers. Blazers say, sure, we could do that. Anything short of that, they're going to say thanks, but no thanks, and hang up the phone. So that's why it's everything for me. It's a great tweet, and there's no chance of Dame coming to the Lakers.
Guys, this is nothing for me because I think Dame is so sick of all the attention that has been created in the last few weeks with where's he going to go. I don't think he's going to the Lakers. I still believe when all is said and done, if he goes anywhere, he's headed to the Knicks with Tibbs to play on the stage in Madison Square Garden. But in the meantime, I would be stunned if he started the year anywhere other than Portland. There's way too much time left on that deal, and I don't think any team is going to go all in right now knowing that there's so much uncertainty moving forward.
To your point, though, this is the guy everybody's going to be watching until he gets traded, right? Mm-hmm. Portland's going to be down in the play-in tournament range probably. He's already voiced earlier this summer that he needs the team to get better, to commit to for him to realize it's a place where he can win long-term. They're kind of the same team they were last year. This is clearly something that's going to be hanging out there wherever it ends up until there's some kind of resolution.
Yeah, I think it's nothing in regards to the Lakers, as you pointed out, Tim. I do think it's something in regards to, I just love Dame on Twitter, as Clinton said. Like, I just love the fact that he is so active on Twitter. All right, let's shift gears to the Bay Area, where Dame is from originally, in an interview with Melo, Carmelo Anthony's What's in Your Glass podcast. I love this, a wine podcast. Steph Curry discusses his desire to play in the 2024 Olympics. Let's take a listen.
Will we see you in Paris in 24?
I mean, I hope so, bro. Like, this year, I don't have any regrets about, you know, not playing. Just personally, wasn't the right time, and knowing that, you know, that everything went this year and looking forward to next year. But it is only 3 years away, so.
That's a long time now, champ. That's a long time.
I know. You see, I'm trying to will it and speak it into existence.
That's long time.
We'll see if you know, these legs can do what they need to do, but that would be an amazing, you know, opportunity. I haven't played in the Olympics, and that's what made this kind of summer decision extremely difficult. Knowing I hadn't had that, you know, that opportunity, but yeah, we'd love to play.
What do you think Carmelo had in that glass? Was it a cab,
just about
a Bordeaux?
To ask that. I'm a Malbec guy. I need to know.
Pinot Noir, maybe. I mean, I had a nice Bordeaux at dinner
so
last
tremendous.
Night.
It holds the stem. That was great.
It's so great. All right, so Nick, let's start with you. Steph wanted to play in the 2024 Olympics, something, nothing, or everything. You cover that team.
George, it's a little something, but it's not much. There are 3 years here. All Steph said in the last year and a half prior to the pandemic was, I'm playing in Tokyo. I'm going to Tokyo. I want to be there. And then all this stuff happened. He got hurt. He didn't go anymore. There's only two things left in an all-time great career like Steph's had to this point that he doesn't have now. Finals MVP and a gold medal. I'd be really surprised if he was able to get back to the finals. The gold medal is something he really wants. I think he really wants to go to Paris, but there is a long time, even 3 years, between right now and what may happen a couple years down the line.
I'm going to say everything because the Olympics are in Paris in 3 years. And there's hopefully not going to be a pandemic at that point. I think you're going to see a ton of guys wanting to play in that Olympics. You know, that's an awesome city. That's going to be, you know, the first Olympics in 8 years where you don't have all this stuff going on this year, like in Tokyo, where you saw a lot of guys be iffy about having to go quarantine and sort of be in a bubble again. At that point, Steph will be 36. To your point, Nick, obviously he's done everything else in his career. And if he wants to be an Olympian, I think he'll be on the team. He's earned that cachet, I think, at this point. And look, with his shooting ability, even at 36, he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to help them in FIBA games in the Olympics. So I think as long as, like you said, he spent the last year and a half saying he'd play in Tokyo, but I think for a lot of reasons, I'm expecting Steph to play in Paris in 2024.
It's a big nothing for me. I just think USA basketball is a wayward thing. What are we trying to do here? Simply win gold medals by bringing old guys back from the NBA after they're done with the playoffs? Or are we trying to develop dudes into stars, perhaps to be somewhere else and have some continuity? Steph Curry at that age in the Olympics, it's just not a big thing for me. I don't gather with my boys to watch USA basketball, and neither do you. Trust me.
Okay. Well, I think it's something. I do think that, to Nick's point, on his resume, it's something that's missing at this point. And look, I just want to think that these guys want to do this because they also want to make the commitment. What we've seen here is over the last several Olympics, unlike 2008 with the Redeem team, that the commitments have become shorter and shorter and shorter. And I think that continuity is a thing as the rest of the world catches up. All right, Clinton, thank you so much. Go try a Malbec for lunch somewhere.
Always here to represent the handsome man community. I appreciate the time.
All right, yesterday, ESPN hit up the Twitter streets with the following question. Name the most unstoppable duo in sports history. So, Tim, who's your duo in NBA history?
We love the Twitter streets line today. I like that. Back into the second half of the show. I think you got to go with Scotty and MJ. I mean, just the fact that they went 6-0 in the finals in the 90s. I mean, there's a ton of different combinations you can go with, but that was kind of my default answer.
Guys, it's Michael and Scotty. It has to be. Nobody touched them. They had an aura on the floor, and they were unstoppable when they were at their best.
See, I'm going to go with Shaq and Kobe, and I know they lost to the Pistons, but I feel like prime Shaq and prime Kobe, when they were on the same page on the floor, we all know that sometimes it wasn't the case off the floor, unstoppable. I don't think anybody could stop Shaq in his prime. So that's my group. That's my duo. All right, with some of the moves that have happened during the offseason, we're going to get into a couple of questions here, particularly this one. Which conference is now stronger, the East or the West? Tim, go.
I think it's the East, and I think it's clearly the East now. You know, for a long time, the Western Conference has been the superior one, but you look at the way this is shaking out right now, I think that the Milwaukee Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets are the two best teams in the league by a fairly significant amount. I think you can argue that your Miami Heat, George, are as good or better than any of these top teams in the West. And I think when you look at the Eastern Conference from top to bottom, there are 12 teams that are legitimate playoff caliber teams. There's really only Orlando, Cleveland, and Detroit that you go into the season thinking these are not quality playoff level teams. So I think the East is deeper, and I think at the top it's stronger than the West, which is not something we'd be able to say for a very long time.
George, I'm with Timmy B here completely, because it has been about 15, 20 years at least where you thought the East is legitimately pretty good, but the key word to me is the depth. Because top to bottom, you're looking at these teams, and most of these teams think they have a legitimate chance not only to get into the postseason, but make noise once they get in and start rolling. So I love the Nets and the Bucks. I think the Heat are going to be really, really solid. And when you compare that to what's in the West right now, yes, you have some teams that have a chance to get into the finals and get rolling, but you don't feel the same way about the top of the West, at least I don't, that you do the top of the East and once you start getting into 5, 6, 7, 8 range.
Well, I'm here in Vegas, and I've seen some boards, you know, prediction boards, and you can bet on these potential, what's potentially going to happen next season. There's a lot of Western teams near the top of those boards that I've seen here in Vegas, so I'm going to disagree. While I do agree that the East is way better than it's been in a long, long time, this is probably as strong an East as we've seen in easily 10 years, maybe longer than that. And look, Brooklyn is the team to beat for most people. I think the Lakers are the next betting favorite. But let's look at the West. I think Denver, when they're healthy, is a team that is as good as almost any team in the East outside of Brooklyn. Okay, I look at Utah. I think they what they did last year, I think they can still build off being the number one seed. We saw the Phoenix Suns get to the NBA Finals. I'm curious to see if Luka and Porzingis can make something work. I still feel like the West not only has better teams at the top or teams that are more championship caliber, but I still feel like there's more depth there. Even teams like Minnesota, if they make one move, I still feel like they're better than the Orlandos of the world in the Eastern Conference or the Torontos of the world. Yeah, I couldn't disagree.
Yeah,
any
Minnesota would be better than Orlando, who might be the worst team in the league. I mean, they would not be one. They would not make the playoffs in the East. They'll have the Minnesota Timberwolves will have an easier time making the playoffs in the Western Conference. They would not make the playoffs in the East. Full stop.
So. Okay, but what I'm saying is that if we're going to separate it into a couple of tiers, like championship level, you know, then playoff level, and then the rest, I feel like the West is stronger in each of those particular categories. So, all right, let's move on, though. Let's talk about the East since you're high on the East. The Bulls had a strong offseason, adding Lonzo Ball, DeMar DeRozan, and Alex Caruso. Nick, you covered that team. Do you think they increased their playoff chances?
I think they increased their chances only to a point, though. And, George, this is what stuns me, having covered Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf for years and years. That was an ownership group that did not want to go all in to potentially be a team that got bounced in the first or second round of the playoffs. Well, guess what they just did? They went completely all in on a team that at its highest ceiling maybe gets to the second round of the postseason. So I'm still surprised. I know Karnisovas and Eversley are trying to do their own thing in that front office, and I know fans are excited. But when I look at that team in comparison to the rest of the East, I just don't think they improve that much where you can start looking at them going, oh, okay, I see them having a legitimate chance to get up to the top of the Eastern Conference.
Look, my guy Nick has covered the Bulls for a long time, and he nailed it on the head. The Bulls have gone all in on two sub-all-star 30-year-old guys in Nick Vucevic and DeMar DeRozan to try to keep a guy in Zach LaVine who has never been on a winning team and now is going to be a free agent in a year and could leave. And I think there's a real chance the Bulls don't even make the play-in tournament. You know, when you talk about this depth in the Eastern Conference, I think they could finish 11th or 12th very easily. They're going to have a terrible defense. And you look at the way this team is built, like, yes, those guys are durable, but I do not see them having any kind of high ceiling. And now they can't trade a draft pick until, what, 2030, 2040? I mean, they just put themselves in a box for what? For no high ceiling at all. It's just, it, like Nick said, it's baffling after all the painstaking rebuild they went to not keep Jimmy Butler, who is, by the way, better than all of these guys they have. It's just really strange what the Bulls have set themselves up with here.
Yeah, I agree with you defensively. I don't know how they're going to be able to play defense on that team. I still think they can sneak into the playoffs, certainly in the play-in scenario, so I disagree on that just a little bit. All right, let's move on here. Coming up, what's the biggest takeaway from NBA Summer League so far? Oh, we'll get that for you as we wrap it up here. One more segment to go after the break on The Jump. NBA Summer League rolls on from Vegas with three more games. Heat and Jazz at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific on ESPNU. Then Warriors and Thunder, I'll be on sideline for that one on ESPN2. And back over on ESPNU, I'll be on play-by-play for Grizzlies and Kings. All three games also available on the ESPN app. One app, one tap. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Speaking of Summer League, Jalen Suggs and Jalen Green both suffered injuries at Summer League yesterday. Nick, how would you grade both of the Jalen's Summer League thus far?
George, I love both of them, but Jalen Suggs, my Orlando Magic, have been waiting so long for relevancy to have some guy who's going to help them build for the future finally. To watch him and to see how excited all his younger teammates are to play with him, I cannot wait to see what he does down in Orlando in the next few years.
I told my guy, Nick, when the Orlando Magic drafted Jalen Suggs on draft night, that he was set. They finally have the guy to build this team around. We've waited a decade, ever since Dwight Howard left, for the Orlando Magic to be relevant again, really relevant. Jalen Suggs is going to get them back to relevancy. Jalen Green was great. He has had a really good week, but Jalen Suggs is a star.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a star, and I love Green, too. He's had a great summer league. Next, Emmanuel Quickley has had a great summer league, averaging 24 points and just under 8 assists a game. Tim, how good do you expect Quickley to be next season?
I think he's going to be good, George. And the thing that stands out to him, and you guys both know this, is when all these young guys come in the league, they tend to say, you know, LeBron's my favorite player, Kevin Durant's my favorite player. Emmanuel Quickley said from the beginning, my favorite player growing up was Lou Williams. And you watch him play, he plays like Lou Williams. He's got that floater, he gets in the lane, he gets to the line. And on this Knicks team, he's going to be a great fit coming off the bench, playing with Derrick Rose like he did last year, behind Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker. The Knicks have gone out and improved their offense a lot this offseason. I think it's really going to be beneficial for them next season.
Tibbs loves Quickley. That is a huge positive. As a young guy who wants to work, he's going to be a really solid fit for a lot of years in New York.
I love the music we played for Emmanuel Quickley there as well. All right, let's stick with the games that have been going out in Vegas this past week. Nick, what's been your biggest takeaway from Summer League?
It has to be Suggs for me, George. I mean, truly, like, I saw Cunningham, he looked good. You mentioned Green, the top tier guys in this draft really look like they're solid. But for me, for the Magic that desperately needed one guy to build around, the fact that Suggs looks so great and looks like that star that Timmy was talking about, that is a great, great sign for all the good people in Orlando.
Beyond the Orlando homer here, the thing that stands out to me is that you look across the NBA, there's something to watch on every team. Yeah. And you saw a lot of these top picks this year went to teams that needed a boost. Talk about Orlando getting Jalen Suggs, Detroit getting Cade Cunningham, you know, Houston getting Jalen Green and Alperen Sengun, Cleveland getting Evan Mobley. Up and down the league, all 30 teams, I can look at them and say, I want to watch this guy play. I think for the health of the league, that's a great place for things to be.
I agree wholeheartedly. By the way, before we go, want to shout out producer Carlos. It is his last day with us here at The Jump. This dude is a champ. He is a beast. We wish him all the best. He's going to be amazing moving on to bigger and better things. There you see him right there with Rachel Perk and Richard at the NBA Finals. Carlos, you're the man, brother. We will miss you, but someone else will be better for it having you on their roster. Thanks for watching The Jump. Thanks to Tim. Thanks to Clinton. Thanks to Nick. We'll be back on Monday. You guys have a great weekend. Enjoy all the Summer League action on ESPN. Take care.